long after the town has gone to sleep, and the house is silent, except for the chimmings of clocks and the sputter of fading fires. She is weeping into a pillow already as wet as a widow's handkerchief. "Don't cry," I say, sitting at the bottom of her bed and shivering despite my flannel nightgown that smells of last winter's cough syrup. "Don't cry," I beg, teasing her toes, tickling her feet. "You're too old for that." "It's because," she hiccups, "I am too old. Old and funny." "Not funny. Fun. More fun than anybody. Listen, if you don't stop crying, you'll be so tired tomorrow you can't go cut a tree." She straightens up. Queenie jumps on the bed, where Queenie is not allowed, to lick her cheeks. "I know where we'll find real pretty trees, buddy. And holly, too, with berries big as your eyes. It's way off in the woods, farther than we've ever been. Papa used to bring us Christmas trees from there, carry them on his shoulder. That's 50 years ago. Well, now, I can't wait for morning." Morning. Frozen rime lusters the grass. The sun, round as an orange, and orange as hot weather moons, balances on the horizon, burnishes the silvered winter woods. A wild turkey calls. A renegade hog grunts in the undergrowth. Soon, by the edge of knee-deep, rapid-running water, we have to abandon the buggy. Queenie wades the stream first, paddles across barking complaints at the swiftness of the current, the pneumonia-making coldness of it. We follow, holding our shoes and equipment, a hatchet, a burlap sack, above our heads. A mile more of chastising thorns, burrs and briers that catch at our clothes, of rusty pine needles brilliant with gaudy fungus and molted feathers. Here, there, a flash, a flutter, an ecstasy of shrillings remind us that not all the birds have flown south. Always the path unwinds through lemony sun pools and pitch-black vine tunnels, another creek to cross. A disturbed armada of speckled trout frosts the water around us, and frogs the size of plates practice belly flops. Beaver workmen are building a dam. On the farther shore, Queenie shakes herself and trembles. My friend shivers too. Not with cold, but enthusiasm. One of her hat's ragged roses sheds a petal as she lifts her head and inhales the pine-heavy air. "We're almost there. Can you smell it, buddy?" she says, as though we were approaching an ocean. And indeed, it is a kind of ocean. Scented acres of holiday trees, prickly-leafed holly, red berries shiny as Chinese bells. Black crows swoop upon them screaming. Having stuffed our burlap sacks with enough greenery and crimson to garland a dozen windows, we set about choosing a tree. "It should be," muses my friend, "twice as tall as a boy, so a boy can't steal the star. The one we pick is twice as tall as me. A brave, handsome brute that survives 30 hatchet strokes before it keels with a creaking, rending cry. Lugging it like a kill, we commence the long trek out. Every few yards, we abandon the struggle, sit down and pant. And we have the strength of triumphant huntsmen. That and the tree's virile, icy perfume revive us. Goad us on. Many compliments accompany our sunset return along the red clay road to town, but my friend is sly and noncommittal when passers-by praise the treasure perched in our buggy. "What a fine tree! And where did it come from?" "Yonder ways," she murmurs vaguely. Once a car stops, and the rich mill's owner's wife. Once a car stops, and the rich mill owner's lazy wife leans out and whines, "Give you two bits, cash for that old tree." Ordinarily, my friend is afraid of saying no, but on this occasion, she promptly shakes her head. "We wouldn't take a dollar," the mill owner's wife persists. "A dollar? My foot! 50 cents, that's my last offer." "Goodness, woman, you can get another one." In answer, my friend gently reflects, "I doubt it. There's never two of anything." Home. Queenie slumps by the fire and sleeps till morning, snoring loud as a human. A trunk in the attic contains a shoebox of ermine tails off the opera cape of a curious lady who once rented a room in the house. Coils of frazzled tinsel gone gold with age. One silver star, a brief rope of dilapidated, undoubtedly dangerous, candy-like light bulbs. Excellent decorations as far as they go, which isn't far enough. My friend wants our tree to blaze like a Baptist window, droop with weighty snows of ornament, but we can't afford the made in Japan splendors at the five and dime. So we do what we've always done. Sit for days at the kitchen table with scissors and crayons and stacks of colored paper. I make sketches and my friend cuts them out. Lots of cats, fish too, because they're easy to draw. Some apples, some watermelons, a few winged angels devised from saved up sheets of Hershey bar tinfoil. We use safety pins to attach these creations to the tree. As a final touch, we sprinkle the branches with shredded cotton, picked in August for this purpose. My friend, surveying the effect, clasps her hands together. "Now, honest buddy, doesn't it look good enough to eat?" Queenie tries to eat an angel. After weaving and ribboning holly wreaths for all the front windows, our next project is the fashioning of family gifts. Tie-dye scarves for the ladies. For the men, a home-brewed lemon and licorice and aspirin syrup to be taken at the first symptoms of a cold and after hunting. But when it comes time for making each other's gift, my friend and I separate to work secretly. I would like to buy her a pearl-handled knife, a radio, a whole pound of chocolate-covered cherries. We tasted some once, and she always swears, "I could live on them, buddy." Lord, yes, I could, and that's not taking his name in vain. Instead, I am building her a kite. She would like to give me a bicycle. She said so on several million occasions. "If only I could, buddy. It's bad enough in life to do without something you want. But confound it, what gets my goat is not being able to give somebody something you want them to have. Only one of these days, I will, buddy, locate you a bike. Don't ask how. Steal it, maybe." Instead, I'm fairly certain that she is building me a kite. The same as last year and the year before. The year before that, we exchanged slingshots, all of which is fine with me, for we are champion kite flyers who study the wind like sailors. My friend, more accomplished than I, can get a kite aloft when there isn't breeze to carry clouds. Christmas Eve afternoon, we scrape together a nickel and go to the butcher's to buy Queenie's traditional gift, a good, gnawable beef bone. The bone, wrapped in funny paper, is placed high in the tree near the silver star. Queenie knows it's there. She squats at the foot of the tree, staring up in a trance of greed. When bedtime arrives, she refuses to budge. Her excitement is equaled by my own. I kick the covers and turn my pillow as though it were a scorching summer's night. Somewhere, a rooster crows. Falsely, for the sun is still on the other side of the world. "Buddy, are you awake?" It is my friend, calling from her room, which is next to mine, and an instant later she is sitting on my bed, holding a candle. "Well, I can't sleep a hoot," she declares. "My mind's jumping like a jackrabbit. Buddy, do you think Mrs. Roosevelt will serve our cake at dinner?" We huddle in the bed, and she squeezes my hand. "I love you. Seems like your hand used to be so much smaller. I guess I hate to see you grow up. When you're grown up, will we still be friends?" I say, "Always. But I feel so bad, buddy. I wanted to give you a bike. I tried to sell my Cameo Papa gave me. Buddy," she hesitates as though embarrassed, "I made you another kite." Then I confess that I made her one too. And we laugh. The candle burns too short to hold. Out it goes, exposing the starlight. The stars spinning at the window like a visible caroling that slowly, slowly daybreak silences. Possibly we doze, but the beginnings of dawn splash us like cold water. We're up, wide-eyed, and wandering like we wait for others to awaken. Quite deliberately, my friend drops a kettle on the kitchen floor. I tap dance in front of closed doors. One by one, the household emerges, looking as though they'd like to kill us both. But it's Christmas, so they can't. First, a gorgeous breakfast, just everything you can imagine, from flapjacks and fried squirrel to hominy grits and honey in the comb, which puts everyone in a good humor, except my friend and me. Frankly, we're so impatient to get at the presents, we can't eat a mouthful. Well, I'm disappointed. Who wouldn't be? With socks, a Sunday school shirt, some handkerchiefs, a hand-me-down sweater, and a year's subscription to a religious magazine for children, The Little Shepherd. It makes me boil. It really does. My friend has a better haul, a sack of satsumas. That's her best present. She is proudest, however, of a white wool shawl knitted by her married sister. But she says her favorite gift is the kite I built her. And it is very beautiful, though not as beautiful as the one she made me, which is blue and scattered with gold and green, good conduct stars. Moreover, my name is painted on it, Buddy. Buddy, the wind is blowing. The wind is blowing, and nothing will do till we've run to a pasture below the house where Queenie has scooted to bury her bone, and where a winter hence Queenie will be buried. There, plunging through the healthy waist-high grass, we unreel our kites, feel them twitching at the string like skyfish as they swim into the wind. Satisfied, sun-warmed, we sprawl in the grass and peel satsumas and watch our kites cavort. Soon, I forget the socks and hand-me-down sweater. I'm as happy as if we'd already won the $50,000 grand prize in the coffee naming contest. "My, how foolish I am," my friend cries, suddenly alert like a woman remembering too late she has biscuits in the oven. "You know what I've always thought?" she asks in a tone of discovery and not smiling at me, but a point beyond. "I've always thought a body would have to be sick and dying before they saw the Lord. And I imagined that when he came, it would be like looking at the Baptist window, pretty as colored glass with the sun pouring through. Such a shine, you don't know it's getting dark. And it's been a comfort to think of that shine taking away all that spooky feeling. But I'll wager it never happens. I'll wager at the very end, a body realizes the Lord has already shown himself, that things are as they are. Her hand circles in a gesture that gathers clouds and kites and grass and Queenie pawing earth over her bone. Just what they've always seen was seeing him. As for me, I could leave the world with today in my eyes. As for me, I could leave the world with today in my eyes. This is our last Christmas together. Life separates us. Those who know best decide that I belong in a military school. And so follows a miserable succession of bugle-blowing prisons, grim revelry-ridden summer camps. I have a new home, too, but it doesn't count. Home is where my friend is, and there I never go. And there she remains, puttering around the kitchen, alone with Queenie, then alone. "Buddy dear," she writes, in her wild, hard-to-read script, "yesterday Jim Macy's horse kicked Queenie bad. Be thankful she didn't feel much. I wrapped her in a fine linen sheet and rode her in the buggy down to Simpson's pasture, where she can be with all her bones. For a few Novembers she continues to bake her fruitcakes, single-handed, but not as many, but some. And of course she always sends me the best of the batch. Also, in every letter, she encloses a dime, wadded in toilet paper. See a picture show and write me the story. But gradually, in her letters, she tends to confuse me with her other friend, the buddy who died in the 1880s. More and more, 13s are not the only days she stays in bed. A morning arrives in November, a leafless, birdless coming of winter morning, when she cannot rouse herself to explain, "Oh my, it's fruitcake weather." And when that happens, I know it. A message saying so merely confirms a piece of news some secret vein had already received, severing from me an irreplaceable part of myself, letting it loose like a kite on a broken string. That is why, walking across a school campus on this particular December morning, I keep searching the sky, as if I expected to see, rather like hearts, a lost pair of kites hurrying toward heaven.
Did you know that cannabis was recently legalized in Canada? With this new legalization, the laws surrounding cannabis use and driving have also been affected. You have probably heard that cannabis use does not affect your driving, but that statement is a myth. Some of the effects cannabis has on a person driving are reduced alertness, altered perception of time and distance, and it also results in reduced ability to react to unexpected events on the road. We at Mothers Against Drunk Driving are here to keep impaired drivers off of the roads and to keep the people of our community safe.
Go to mad.ca to learn more about driving under the influence.
The hardest part of being homeless is the loneliness.
Loneliness is the hardest part of being human.
Lately, we all know what it's like to feel lonely and disconnected.
But a simple meal can bring us together in amazing ways.
At Union Gospel Mission, a meal connects people to a community where lives are transformed.
You can give a meal that can bring people together in life-changing ways.
Give now at ugm.ca.
Next, I will be re-airing one of my very favorite radio tales. It's a Christmas radio tale that tells the story of the year that I discovered there was no Santa Claus. While that may have come as a shock to me, on that same morning, I did discover that there was David Cassidy. Here is that radio tale now.
Radio tale number 6. David Cassidy, I think I loved you. It was my first Christmas in Vancouver. I was 7 years old with Santa on my mind. As the winds blew outside my window, a snowstorm was brewing, and little did I know that David Cassidy was on the horizon of my life. That morning when my older sister opened her Christmas gift from Santa Claus, the Partridge Family Red Album, there he was. As she played the vinyl album over and over again, with my dad shouting at her to turn it down, David Cassidy kept right on singing on that snowy Christmas morning. I think I love you, so what am I so afraid of? Starry-eyed, I sang along, thinking that maybe David Cassidy could be my boyfriend, despite my crossed eyes and broken glasses. As I reflect on this, I am in awe of me at that age. Who knew that I could be transported in the blink of an eye from Twinkle Twinkle Little Star into the frenzied love soundscape of David Cassidy? Reflecting on my insatiable ability to fall in love with love songs, and at such a young age, I am taken back to yet another time in my life. I am in grade 9, and Susie Quattro has topped the charts with her 1978 runaway hit, Stumbling In.
Our love is a lie.
As I recall those teenage nights, singing alongside Quattro as she belted out her regrets of unrequited love, I think of David Cassidy. He, a Hollywood superstar, and me, a grade 2 girl who wondered where life might take me. At that time, however, I was 7 years old, with 2 years under my belt. 2 years of chasing boys through school hallways and baseball fields. And if truth be known, I was ready for some new music. And a teen heartthrob who sang of love and all things romance. Too young to kiss, but thinking, maybe it was a good idea. I also thought that maybe I might meet David Cassidy when I got older. It was a pivotal year for me, 1970. The Partridge Family aside, it was also the year I discovered there was no Santa. I blame it on the educational system, because had I never learned to count, Santa might still be getting a Christmas letter from me. However, counting changed my life forever, and Santa's, I'm sure. There's a sadness in discovering that a jolly old man would not be coming down the chimney, and come to think of it, if he was, you should probably be calling the police. Sometimes I wonder if this sadness is about the loss of Christmas magic, or perhaps a loss of hope. A hope that if you're having a hard time making your Christmas happen, you know that there's going to be a jolly old man who's going to show up and help you out. Even in the families where a jolly old man doesn't show up, there's always the hope
that he will. Regardless to what I woke up to that Christmas morning, while I may have stopped believing in Santa Claus, that 7-year-old girl did believe in music, and I did believe in David Cassidy, and that was something. Merry Christmas, David Cassidy. I think I loved you.
I'm sleeping and right in the middle of a good dream. Like all at once I wake up from something that keeps knocking at my brain. Before I go insane, I hold my pillow to my head and spring up in my bed, screaming out the words I dread. I think I love you.
I think I love you.
This morning I woke up with this feeling I didn't know how to deal with, and so I just decided to myself I'd hide it to myself and never talk about it, and did not go and shout it when you walked into the room.
Girly So Groovy, Women Who Rock for Fans Who Love Them, coming up next. And tune in again next week for inspiring stories to bring in the new year. So now I leave you with one final tune. Here I have Robbie Robertson and the band with Christmas Must Be Tonight off Elton John's Christmas Party, released in 2005. Merry Christmas, everybody, and God bless us, everyone.
Come down to the manger, see the little stranger wrapped in swaddling, clothed the Prince of Peace. The wheels start turning, torches start burning, and behold, wise men journey from the east. Much joy, son of a carpenter. Mary carried the light. This must be Christmas, must be tonight. A shepherd on the hillside, where over my flock I abide. On a cold winter night, band of angels sing. In a dream I heard a voice say, fear not, come rejoice. It's the end of the beginning, praise the newborn King. How a little baby boy bring the people so much joy, son of a carpenter. Must be tonight. I saw it with my own eyes, written up in the sky. The wise simple herdsman such as I. And then it came to pass,
Do you like music, or do you like technology, or do you like talking to people? CJSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CJSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit CJSF.